Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at PR@speakuptalkradio.com. Well, I have quite an interesting author to share with you today. She is Linnea Tanner. Linnea weaves Celtic tales of love, magic, adventure, betrayal, and intrigue into historical fiction set in ancient Rome and Britannia. Since childhood, she has passionately read about ancient civilizations and mythology, which held women in higher esteem. Now, depending on the time of day and season of the year, you will find her exploring and researching ancient and medieval history, mythology, and archaeology to support her writing. As the author of the Apollo's Raven series, she has extensively researched and traveled to sites described within each book. A native of Colorado, Linnea attended the University of Colorado and earned both her bachelor's and master's degree in chemistry. She lives in Windsor with her husband and has 2 children and 6 grandchildren, and it is my pleasure to bring her on. So welcome to the network, Linnea.
Thank you very much, Pat.
Well, it's my pleasure to have you here today. A very interesting topic. I don't think I've had an author with quite the conversation that we're about to have today, so I'm looking forward to it. Now, Linnea, you have had an interest, you say, in your book topics since childhood. Was there any one instance, or was there a book, perhaps, that kicked off your inspiration?
Well, I think in general it was Greek and Roman and Nordic mythology, in which, I was very fascinated that, women were depicted as goddesses, and there were just some amazing tales about the Amazon. So I think my mother allowed me to read different books, and including mythology.
So this was just a lifelong, I guess, a passion of yours. So the traveling, did that come first? Did the writing come first?
I've always had the idea of this Celtic warrior princess in my head since childhood. But I think what really sparked my interest as far as writing this story is when I traveled to Europe or into the UK. And what fascinated me is that there was a warrior queen who almost kicked Rome out of Britain in 61 AD. And this is someone that the British actually embraced, but, we haven't heard that much about it in the United States.
Travel does that to you, doesn't it? I think it opens up one's mind and you realize that there's so much more than what we find just in our own little box growing up.
Right. And it amazed me in UK and in Britain, all the Roman artifacts you can find, and also, artifacts of the Celtic tribal people who lived before Romans invaded Britain.
So now your series, you say, is inspired by Arthurian legends and the legacy of Cleopatra and Mark Antony. Maybe give us a sneak peek into this book. It's Apollo's Raven. Give us a little idea of what it's about.
Okay, it's about a Celtic warrior princess. Her name is Catrin, and this is in 24 AD Britannia, and she's actually swept into a political web of deception when the Emperor Tiberius demands allegiance from her father, King Amran. And when they make these demands, she falls in love with Marcellus, who's retained as a hostage while they negotiate elsewhere as far as the terms of what her father needs to meet. But she falls under the magical spell of Marcellus as she's held in charge of him as a hostage. She has a lot of conflict because she's been asked to spy on him also. Another thing in the kingdom is there's a curse that's looming over her father that indicates that the kingdom is going to be destroyed, and she desperately wants to break this. So she's basically torn between her forbidden love for Marcellus and loyalty to her people. And this is where the fantastical elements of Celtic magic come into place, where she calls upon the magic of the ancient Druids to try to alter the dark prophecy that looms over her.
Very interesting. So, I mean, there's many books that are written with that thought of forbidden love versus loyalty, but now you add, you say that magic and the Druids, and it takes it to another level.
Right. So, so it's a blend of, and I'm actually taking some true historical events and characters, but I'm blending in the Celtic magic and mythology into the book, and it almost becomes like a part of the history of the Celts and the Romans.
Very fascinating. How long did it take for you to write this book?
Well, I've been writing on the series since 2010, and it's interesting. I actually wrote probably the third book first, but then I decided that I needed to start earlier in the series. So Apollo's Raven itself, I probably worked on 2 to 3 years to really set up this series much better. I would say, yeah, it's an 8-year adventure that I've been on this.
I love the word adventure because it is, isn't it?
It is quite an adventure.
So as you're writing this, are you also traveling at the same time to support the research and to support the facts for the book?
Yes, I do extensively travel. I try to travel at least once a year to Britain, and I've traveled to different areas where the book takes place. So the book primarily takes place in Kent, southeast Britain, and I've done a lot of, I've actually, it takes place near Canterbury, but also around the Dover Cliffs. So I've extensively hiked the Dover Cliffs, and I've traveled to different areas so I can get a feel of the weather and you know, what it's like there. But I've also traveled to other areas in Britain to help support this, and including Colchester, which actually, Boudicca, she actually burned that town down, but it's the oldest town in Britain. So, I've done an extensive research.
Mm-hmm. Do you think you could have written this without the travel?
You know, I probably could have written it, but, you know, I couldn't have gotten the feel for what the weather was like, because the weather just really impacts what it's like to be in Britain and some of the mood that you create in the book. So, I think the travels were really important to me, and to do the extensive research really was important for me to understand the culture of the Celts and how the Romans felt towards them. And I think that it was very critical to me writing this book.
Yeah, I kind of knew the answer to that, but I was just wondering what your thoughts what your thoughts were on that. It's so much more richer for you having been there and actually used the word feel, that you could feel the weather so that you actually feel what it feels like to be there. And how else can you relate that to someone else unless you've actually felt it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm, I get that. So now you have another book that's coming up, the sequel or the second in the series?
Yes, it is. It's called Empire's Anvil, and it's going to be a continuation of the first book, except I would say that it's going to even become more dire straits for my protagonist, or Catrin, and because of her forbidden love with Marcellus, the king accuses her of treason, and the ultimate punishment is death unless she can redeem herself. Mm. And so the way she does this is she must prove her loyalty to her father by pledging to defend their kingdom, and he will judge her by the decision she makes. And again, this curse is still looming over their kingdom, which she also must face because she has the ability to change the future, which might stop the curse. But again, when Catrin reunites with Marcellus, her heart is split between her duty to her father and her love for Marcellus, and this is going to be her greatest challenge as far as how she's going to be able to stop the curse. And I think one of the things in this book is how she's going to resolve her relationship with her father when her heart is split, her forbidden love for Marcellus. Hopefully the readers can feel this even more with Catrin.
Right. You know, as you're saying this, I'm thinking we generally don't know what that would feel like to have that conflict of forbidden love versus loyalty. I don't think we know what that would even entail.
Yeah, a really fascinating theme, because it's like how to, and in a way it's kind of like a Romeo and Juliet scenario, that, you know, if you love someone deeply, but they're the enemy, you know, how can you have both? How can you be loyal to people and still love the enemy? So, yeah, it's quite a comedy.
A lot of tension there. How was that for you to write that tension in? How did you reach that area that you could pull it in and make the reader feel that?
You know, when you're right, it's like you almost have to live what they're living, and you know you're not writing effectively unless you yourself can feel the angst that they're feeling. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's just trying to put myself into Catherine's head and just really feel the angst of, you know, because she is a younger character, but it's just, you know, you want so much to have it both, mm-hmm. but you may not have either.
Right.
So it's quite a turmoil.
you're probably exhausted after writing.
It's like, I live that fighting.
You have to take a nap after you write, right?
Right, I do.
I bet you dream about it as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Sometimes I do have dreams about it.
Oh, I love this. You know, so you've got that, you say that angst, but then you weave these Celtic fantastical elements of sorcery, shape-shifting, and curses into this. So how fun is that, just to add that different dimension to this tension?
I guess it does cross genre. And I wasn't going to do that at first. I was just going to have a historical fiction. But then, I started researching more of the religion, the Celts, and some of the mythology, and then I decided to add the fantasy parts of it in. And I have to admit that that has probably been the most fun part of my book, writing some of the elements, because her half-brother's a shapeshifter. So I'm thinking in my mind, what is it like to shapeshift, you know, and he shapeshifts into wolves, and, you know, what would it be like to shapeshift into a wolf? And I love almost getting into the character's head when they're doing these magical aspects. And in some ways, presenting magic and fantasy is much tougher, because you have to present it in such a way that's very concrete to the audience or to your readers. The other thing is, she can change the future, but she does it by, and this was something that kind of came into my head. It just, and it kind of comes from the Greek mythology of fates, but it's like, you know, you're weaving the future, like you're weaving on a loom or something like that. And so, but it's a little different than how I visualize it in the Celtic mythology, where she's actually shifting the future and a wall that transitions between the mortal and spiritual world.
So you're right, this doesn't fit into one nice, neat genre, does it?
No, it doesn't. And no, it doesn't fit it into it all. And I think that was part of the challenge, is how do you write a story that combines both historical mm-hmm. and fantasy and make it seem real to the reader?
Mm-hmm. Wow, yeah, what a challenge you've created for yourself.
I know. It's funny, when I started writing this, my husband told me, he says, why don't you just start out with a short story? And I said, I can't do that. I've got to write this story that's in my mind. So anyway, it turned into an epic. So
obviously, there's a reason for that, a need for you to get this out of you and on paper, right?
Right. And I think that's what it was. I just needed to get this story out and just get it out on paper.
All right, so we have the second book coming up, Empire's Anvil. Now, is there a third coming after that, do you know?
Yes, there will be. I actually turn on from a trilogy. It may be a five-part series. So the third one is, I'm tentatively calling it Nobleman's Amulet. And then there'll be a fourth one definitely in the series, which is, it's going to be called Blood Wolf's Skull, which is probably going to be a book of vengeance. So it's going to take Katrin and Marcel. It's going to take them on this adventure, probably over a span of 15 years.
All right. Well, that's good because that gives readers something to look forward to.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so the third book is roughly drafted now, and so that's my the second book has been copy edited, so I'm getting it ready for release. And then the third book, I'm going to start editing, going back to it and polishing it up now.
Excellent. Wow, this is exciting. So, Linnea, when you write, do you write every day in the same spot? What inspires you, and is there a place that you like to write? How does that happen for you?
I do writing in two ways. It's strange. I learned this from a workshop, but I do my first draft by hand. So I actually hand write out my first draft, and I always do this at the kitchen table. But when I actually go to edit, which is probably mostly what my writing consists of, is editing what I've drafted. I have a separate office space where I have a computer and I do my editing there.
That's interesting that you say that you write it longhand. I still find comfort in writing any first draft longhand, even if I'm making notes for what I have to do for the day. It just seems like I need to do that, I guess you want to call it, the old-fashioned way.
Right, and the reason they brought it up in the workshop, and I think there's a lot of truth to it, they said that with handwriting, you connect more with your creative brain. You're not as likely to edit yourself as you write. While when you type, you actually connect more with your analytical brain. So when I heard that, I thought it was very interesting. It was kind of hard to start writing by hand like that. But once I started doing it, I really am much more creative when I write by hand, and I can just let myself go.
Wow, that is brilliant, and it makes perfect sense, doesn't it?
It does, yes.
All right, now I figured myself out, because I sit there and write, and I think, this is silly. I could just be sitting at the computer, but something just feels a little bit off when I do that, and I never knew what it was. And I think you just clarified that for me. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And you know, it's too bad that they've kind of taken the emphasis off the handwriting, because mm-hmm. I think it is important. So so much emphasis is put on the computer.
I agree. I think we just had a revelation here today.
Right.
Well, now back to your books. I want to hit on this before we bounce off to something else. But we talked about one of the underlying themes, forbidden love versus loyalty. Are there other themes in your books, and why did you choose them?
Okay. You know, I think some other underlying themes is just maybe it's constant throughout the book, but it's really the theme of almost passion, love versus duty. I think the other thing that will come out is that it's the corruption of politics, and it's also questioning whether you lose kind of some of your humanity when you're in power. And then that's something I'm going to be focusing kind of in the second book, because Katrin's father is brutal, but one of the revelations he's going to come through in the book is the power of corruption and how he's turned so brutal because of it. And hopefully he's going to be learning about himself through this.
I like that. I think about that often, you know, about how people, once they do get a position of power, even if it's just school board member, they seem to lose that bit of humanity once they feel that sense of power. And so it's interesting that you're writing from so long ago. Today, it's still the same.
Right. No, there's so much relevance in history it's universal truths that just can just keep being repeated, throughout the times, and it's very relevant now.
Interesting that we don't learn from history.
Right.
No. Wow, we've said a lot of profound things here today that I need to think about once we get done. Let's talk a little about your characters, Katrin and Marcellus. Where did they come from?
Yeah, I think Katrin almost came. I think when I was a little girl, I grew up in the 50s and 60s, and this was before the women's liberation. And I think, I almost escaped into this character, Katrin, when I felt like I needed to be stronger. And I think of myself more as a warrior, that, you know, you need to face kind of obstacles in your life. So in a way, she's kind of been with me throughout my life. Interestingly, Marcellus came up based on my research of Mark Antony. And I thought it was very interesting that Mark Antony, of course, had bad press. And, you know, he was ultimately brought down as far as his legacy in Rome because of his relationship with Cleopatra. But what was more interesting is that his son, it wasn't with Cleopatra, but with an earlier wife, that his name was Julius Antony, and he had an affair with Augustus' daughter, and he also was accused of treason. In a way, he was kind of brought down with a woman, too, and he's forced to commit suicide. And so the character, Marcellus, the next, what happened after Julius Antonius was forced to commit suicide is that his son was banished to Gaul. And I was thinking, how would someone like that feel after being banished for what their fathers did? And so basically Marcellus is what I call the great-grandson of Mark Antony, and he's living under the shadow of what's happened to his forefather. And so that's where his character came into being.
Interesting, interesting. So did you, prior to writing these characters, did you sit down and flesh them all out, or did you just start with them and they kind of flesh themselves out?
Well, you know, probably I started backwards. In a way, they fleshed out as I started to write. And I probably would do it a little differently now, but I had a basic idea of what they were like, but it actually took me writing the story to really flesh out what they were like, because, I mean, that's how you know someone's characters, by the decisions they make in your book, mm-hmm. and how they're going to act. So, I think they fleshed out, actually, as I wrote the book.
Mm-hmm. But you think you would do that differently, you say?
Well, I try to have a better, and I'm doing that now, just to have a better idea of what their characterization is like. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's part of the experience of learning to be a writer.
Right.
Is, you know, you learn, I don't know if you say it's your mistakes, but you learn through the process of, you know, how to write more effectively.
Yes, you do learn, obviously, as you hone the craft. Thinking of that, though, as you've been writing these books, what have you learned about yourself, or how have you grown, or is there anything that surprised you about yourself personally through this writing journey?
Well, you know, I have more of a scientific background, and what writing does is it helps open your emotions and that side of you that I probably haven't openly expressed before, and just some of the deep feelings you have. And I think maybe that's what I've learned about myself is by Katrin, you know, just realizing the strength that you do have, you know, maybe as a woman or as a person, but sometimes, and also your vulnerabilities and learning to address it. So I think I've had to address some of my weaknesses or vulnerabilities and just kind of face that more. Mm-hmm. So I think it has helped me learn a lot about myself.
I love that. I've talked to so many authors, and I don't really think that many people write to sell. I mean, that's obviously you want to sell books, but I think there's such a deep underlying piece to being a writer that there's just so much inside of you that has to come out. And then obviously you grow and learn as a human. And yeah, I just think it's a very interesting process and a journey.
Right. No, I agree. Yeah, it's a passion. And it's like, you know, even if I didn't sell my books or whatever, it's just something I have to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's very important to do that.
No, I get that. I feel that from you. That's why I brought that up, because I do think a lot of people write just from the heart, just to express and be creative. And that's one of the things I appreciate about self-publishing, because it really allows more voices out there than than the past. Tell us a little about your publishing process. How did you go about getting the book published?
I did pitch the agents at first, but I decided to just go ahead and go on the process of publishing. And so basically what I've done is I've gone to workshops, but I've also have gotten experts to help me in the process. So I definitely use like beta readers, critique readers, and also I work with a developmental editor to make sure that my story unrolls correctly. I do use experts who like do the book cover, the inner layout or whatever. But I guess I've learned from other people, but I've also done a lot of research and have learned a lot on my own. So it's been what I call an exponential growth, an exponential learning curve as far as learning how to do this. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely a business.
It is a business, and it is a learning curve. You almost need to be two people because it's difficult to concentrate on that creativity, the time that you want to devote to writing, and the other side of it, which is the marketing as well, not only just getting the book published, but then what do you do with it once it's done?
Right. So, yeah. So there's a lot to it, and, you know, and like I said, I enjoy the creative part of it, but I also know I have to do this other part, mm-hmm. and which I'm trying to learn to enjoy more. So,
I guess it is all a matter of perception, right?
Yes, it is.
I try to think that way as well. I get it. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, because you have to enjoy what you do. So,
well, I can tell that you do. I can tell you run deep, and so do your books. And I'm thrilled that you've got a couple more coming up for our readers to anticipate. Well, we've talked a bit about the book and your process and lots of good things, but is there anything we missed that you wanted to bring up today?
I don't think so. I think the main thing is that the second book, and right now it's called Empire's Anvil, but just so people know, I do plan to release it in early fall, in September, or by the first part of October. And if people are interested in my books, it is the printed book is widely available through Amazon and also Barnes & Noble. But the ebook right now is available through Amazon.
Okay, so they could head over to Amazon to get the books. Give us a little more information where folks can then find out more about you and maybe contact you and give us your website. I think you have a blog as well.
Right, yeah. I'd be happy for people to check out my blog. It's under my name, LinneaTanner.com. I do have a separate blog called Apollo's Raven. If you want to contact me, it's very easy. You can contact me at Linnea@LinneaTanner.com. And you can also, I have a place you can contact me through email on my website. And if people would like to subscribe to my website, I do keep people posted on different blogs that I do, updates on my books and appearances.
Alrighty, so the website is LinneaTanner.com. That's LinneaTanner.com, LinneaTanner.com. And we'll send folks there to check out Apollo's Raven and the new books that are coming up. Well, any final words then, Linnea, before we say goodbye?
I don't think so. I just wanted to thank you very much, Pat, for doing this with me, and I've really enjoyed this interview with you.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. We'll have to do this again when your future books come out because there's lots to share. So thank you so much for sharing you with us today.
Okay, thank you.